It's Central Time. I'm Darrell Connor.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up, if you think those risk-free product trials that you see online are too good to be true, you're probably right. We'll talk to the Better Business Bureau about why those offers are likely to be pricey scams.
First, flu activity is picking up steam in parts of the country. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is reporting high levels in 9 states. Last week, only Georgia and Colorado were in that category. 11 children have died from the flu or pneumonia so far this season.
Here in Wisconsin and the upper Midwest, there's not a whole lot going on flu-wise yet, but we've got a long way to go before flu season will be over.
Health officials nationwide are saying it's way too early to know how bad this year is going to be. They're also encouraging people to get their flu shots before more and more cases start popping up.
Dr. Al DeBobne is an infectious disease specialist at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. Dr. DeBobne, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So what is your take on this start to the year's flu season? Is it fairly typical so far, or does anything stand out to you?
Flu activity is variable year to year. Typically the peak is around February, but we start to see activity around late fall, early winter, so around December. So that's kind of the typical case for the flu season.
So we're in the beginning part of the season. It'll peak in probably 6 or 8 weeks. When does it generally taper off?
It could last all the way until May, but typically the peak is around February. So typically we tell patients to kind of expect the flu season to last anywhere from October to May, with the heaviest activity between December and February.
So I have to say, looking around here at work, out in public with friends, there are a lot of people that seem kind of low-level sick. How do you tell if there might be flu going on or if it's more just the garden variety colds and general snuffles?
Absolutely. Typically what we tell patients to look for is, high fever, cough, sore throat, runny nose, muscle aches, and the fever tends to be a little on the high side. And, typically people are a little bit sicker than a typical cold. So that's kind of what we ask people to kind of look for.
And does a flu case tend to last a little longer than a cold as well?
It can. Yeah, absolutely. And people tend to be a bit more infectious, and they can transmit the virus anywhere from 1 to 4 days, depending on when they got sick.
And who do you recommend should get the flu shot?
The recommendation is for anybody, really, 6 months and older. And it's a fairly broad recommendation, but there are populations that are at higher risk for flu complications, like people that are older than 65, people with chronic medical conditions like diabetes, people that are pregnant, people with chronic kidney disease, and then young kids. So these are the groups that tend to be affected by the flu virus with higher morbidity and mortality. But really the recommendation for the flu vaccine is anybody 6 months and older.
So, Dr. DeBobne, you said that the flu season starts around December. It peaks around February, but it can go as far as maybe May or even kind of trickle after that. I know that a lot of healthcare facilities and drugstores were starting to talk about, time to get your flu shot in September and October. How long does the flu shot last?
It can last you for the entire season, so you don't have to get another shot if you get it early. We usually say, the flu season begins, late fall, early winter. And, depending on the year, you may have an uptick of flu activity earlier than previous years. But what we typically say is to recommend that whenever the flu vaccine becomes available, to go ahead and get your flu shot. It does take the flu shot about 2 weeks to provide full immunity. So if you get it, today, it does take about 2 weeks for it to kick in.
So there's never a time where it's too early to get it if the vaccine is available for that flu season?
Absolutely. If it's available, you can go ahead and get it. You don't want to wait until we're in the middle of a full-fledged influenza season to get your vaccine, and that's because it does take about 2 weeks. That doesn't mean that, you know, if you didn't get your flu shot that you shouldn't get it. You're better off getting it than not getting it.
We're talking with Dr. Al Dababneh right now. He's an infectious disease specialist at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse, and we're talking about this year's flu season, what it might look like, and reasons to get the vaccination. Now, I know, Dr. Dababneh, that the flu virus every year is a little different. Different strains are stronger than others. How is it determined what will be in the flu vaccine for a particular year?
It depends on circulating virus strains in the southern hemisphere. So pretty much based on data that we have, we try and come up with a best guess in terms of what's going to happen in the northern hemisphere. And that's what generates the recommendation for the specific virus strains in the flu vaccine.
And how effective, what's the range of how effective the flu vaccine tends to be in a particular year?
You know, it's fairly variable, and it's kind of hard to tell how effective the flu vaccine is going to be this year. But overall, what we say is, yeah, you're definitely better off with the vaccine than without it. And people tend to do better with the vaccine than without it.
There are people who feel like they get flu symptoms, maybe much milder, but they get flu symptoms after getting the flu shot. Is that a reaction to the vaccination, or is that just a coincidence?
Usually the concern that people have is that they may develop the flu from the flu vaccine. And what we say is you really can't develop the flu from the flu vaccine. Really, when people get the fever, it's just a response to getting the vaccine. And it just says that your immune system is reacting to it, and you're probably developing, a good response to the vaccine.
Do we have a sense of, out of the people who are able to get the vaccine, what percentage are being vaccinated for the flu each year?
In terms of the exact numbers, roughly about 50% of the people that can get it do get it. But again, there's a lot of people that should get it that don't. And really, when it comes to getting the vaccine, you're not only protecting yourself, you're also protecting those that can get the vaccine for various reasons. So, like I said, the vaccine is indicated for kids that are 6 months and older. So if you happen to have an infant that's less than 6 months, they can't really get the flu vaccine. So what we say is you're not only protecting yourself, you're also protecting those around you.
And you said that there are some people who are not able to get the flu vaccine. What makes someone ineligible for it?
There are some contraindications like Guillain-Barré where a person can get the flu vaccine. But it doesn't hurt to talk to your doctor about getting the flu shot, and they can tell you whether or not you would qualify. There were some concerns about egg allergy, but we do have kind of an egg-free vaccine. Some people have a fear of needles. There is a nasal vaccine, so they don't have to get an injection. So there's different vaccines that are available, and really it's a good discussion to have with your regular doctor about whether or not the vaccine is good for you. But like I mentioned, the CDC does recommend it for everybody, and Guillain-Barré is really one of the main indications for people not to get the flu shot. Or if you've had a serious reaction to the flu vaccine previously.
And Dr. Dababneh, of course, you're saying that the best thing is to get the flu shot. In addition to that, are there other ways to limit our risk of getting sick?
Yeah, absolutely. Hand washing. That's one of the main things that people should do. Wash your hands. The other thing is, if you're sick, to stay at home. In terms of, staying away from people that, at high risk of developing complications if they get the virus. The other thing is, if you're coughing or sneezing, to cough and sneeze in your elbow as opposed to coughing in your hands, try and get the flu shot. One of the things that people kind of tend to think is that, hey, I'll get the flu shot if I get sick, but sometimes you can transmit the virus even though you don't have any symptoms.
Oh, and as you said, it takes a couple weeks to be fully effective. Before we let you go, Dr. Dabhavani, are there any other seasonal illnesses popping up or other things that you're preparing for as an infectious disease specialist?
Right now, what we're looking for is influenza. That's kind of the main thing that's on our radar right now. So far, we haven't had a lot of cases in our area. So far, we've had about six since October. And luckily, we haven't had any deaths in Wisconsin related to the flu, and that's in the pediatric population.
Well, Dr. Dabhavani, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Dr. Al Dabhavani is an infectious disease specialist at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. We talked with him about the start of this year's flu season. Again, the CDC is reporting high activity in nine states, but a minimal level so far here in Wisconsin.
If you've ever been enticed by a supposedly risk-free trial for a product online that sounds almost too good to be true, it likely is. A new report from the Better Business Bureau found that many of these online offers are rarely risk-free and can end up costing consumers a lot of money.
Our next guest is here to talk about how common these internet scams are, who gets targeted, and how consumers can safeguard their wallets online.
Jim Timmer is the president and CEO of the Wisconsin Better Business Bureau. Jim, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. And first off, the internet is rife with scams, some of which are easier to spot than others. But what's unique about these so-called risk-free trials?
Well, this is a little more sophisticated than a lot of the simple scams you see online. Say, and this time of year, you know, we head into the new year. Many people are thinking weight loss, self-improvement, if it's their skin, their age, whatever it is, they're looking at ways to improve. So maybe you go and Google a certain weight loss medication or a wrinkle reliever, and then you can be redirected through advertising to various landing pages. And some of them look like news reports. And so you start reading about this miracle cure or that miracle cure, and then at the bottom of it, maybe there's a link to a page for a free sample. So you go to that page, and there it lays out again how wonderful this product is going to be, and you're going to lose weight or lose wrinkles or whatever it is. And also you notice that it's has some big celebrity endorsement. Maybe it's Oprah Winfrey or whoever it is. So you think this must be legitimate, and it's free if you don't enjoy it. There's 100% guarantee. So if you return the product, you get your money back. So you think there's not much to lose. So what happens is people sign up for these things without realizing it, without reading the fine print, and instead of getting something for free or a minimal shipping charge, you can be in hundreds and hundreds of dollars every month until you get it to stop.
Now, you talked about skincare and weight loss and other miracle cures. What other kind of products are usually being sold?
Well, I mean, you can think of these just about anywhere. I mean, sometimes in the old days, it used to be gym memberships that people had to look out for the fine print on them, you know, like you could get out of it after 90 days.
Right.
It might be something you download today. It might be signing up for some kind of streaming service. There are so many places, and some are legitimate with their money-back guarantees. I don't want to say that anyone that poses a money-back guarantee is a fraudster out there, but we find, especially our study, we did a national study, and over the past 3 years, we've had almost 37,000 complaints just to the BBB about these type of free trial offers. And according to the government, the FTC over the last 10 years, believe it or not, over $1 billion has been lost to scammers in this type of behavior.
You know, on average, when people get sucked into these so-called deals, how much money are they typically losing on average?
Well, actually, on average, our average loss per person is $186. Some have lost thousands. Some lose less than that.
Wow.
What happens once you sign up for one of these and they say, you know, send it back within 10 days? Well, first of all, you might not get the product until it's 5 or 6 days, and then you may have to contact them and get a code. The scammers make it very difficult. Again, there are some legitimate folks who offer free trials, but if you're on a website and you can't find an address, an actual physical address for a company, it's a big red flag. If you can't find the detailed description of the program and you don't really know what you're signing up for, it's another red flag. And actually, any of the celebrity endorsements, we're finding out, is another big sign that it's fake. Celebrity endorsements, celebrities also, they put things out on their social media pages that these are all fake and they don't fall for them. You know, they have nothing to do with them. Some of these even, you know, we've all filled out credit card information online. Once you put that in there and hit submit, the actual fine print isn't until you would scroll down way past that, past blank areas on the page, and it would tell you how much things really cost. You even have to be careful on the phone. You know, sometimes people phone and it's not all done on the web. And they may say, oh, and also would you like this other product that's just as good? And you sign up for that, and then it's another $90 a month or whatever it is. And as long as they make it difficult for you or they mislead you, people are going to be losing their money. And a lot of these things also then are basically placebos. They aren't even actual, you know, weight loss pills or wrinkle relief or whatever it is. It's nothing.
Jim Timmer is the president and CEO of the Wisconsin Better Business Bureau, and we're talking about some of the dangers of these so-called risk-free trials for products online. Jim, you talked about the so-called celebrity endorsements that aren't really celebrity endorsements. And the question that I have is, you know, are the Oprah Winfreys and the Ellen DeGeneres and so many others that get that are marketed with these products, are they taking action, suing these, be taking legal action, suing some of these products that are using their name and likeness for these scams?
Well, a lot of these scams are, we'll say, come and go. They're kind of fly by night. They'll put their stuff out there. So they're difficult to say, we're going to sue you. Sometimes you can't even find out who they are. Websites can be put up anywhere in the entire world. A lot of these don't originate in the United States, so it's difficult for law enforcement to go after them. But if you look at the social media of these stars, they'll say, we are not affiliated. We aren't doing this. We aren't doing that. Again, Ellen DeGeneres, Oprah Winfrey, their public persona is worth a great deal of money. Whatever it is that they actually support, they're getting reimbursed for that. They stand behind it. So whenever you see, and we tell people, and we have found out through this study that we've done, almost all of the celebrity endorsements that you find on internet products, especially if it's related to free money-back guarantees, are almost all fake.
Now, so go ahead. I'm sorry, Jim.
No, I just said, you can almost use that then as a red flag. If you see some free trial offer and they claim that it's got some celebrity endorser, right there you should stop and back off.
Now, these sites will argue that it clearly says in the fine print the parameters for canceling a free trial or returning a product. In your experience and assessment, you know, how good are consumers at reading fine print like this?
Well, they aren't very good at it. A lot of times they try and make it as confusing. And I'm not talking, again, about the legitimate businesses that do this.
Right.
I'm talking about the scammers out there. They will hide things. They'll make it sound like you can get out of it easy. But if there's a strict time limit, that's another problem. Because if they say you have to return almost the full product within 10 days, you don't get it for 5 days. I mean, it's very difficult to get it back. It shouldn't be that difficult, and the onus on the consumer to try and fulfill the terms of the contract, or if you can't even find the contract. If there's any problem like that, you really have to think about what you're doing. Or if you think it's free and they tell you there'll be a recurring monthly charge on your credit card, and you see that, and you can't contact the company because they don't have contact information. And then maybe you contact your credit card company, which is the best thing you can do after that, and say, stop these charges. I never authorized this to come out of my bank account, and I would like to get a refund. Now, there are troubles sometimes getting refunds through credit cards for these sham operations, but at least you can try and stop additional payments.
And speaking of which, besides, you know, calling your credit card company and having them make a stop on a payment to one of these scams, for those people who have gotten stuck with some of these products or trials, what other recourse do they have in recouping some of their losses if the credit card route isn't working?
Well, if the credit card route isn't working, it's very difficult to get money back from these companies, if not impossible. They are not. They will, again, look to whatever documentation that they have and say they did this legally. You might not even be able to find them. Again, they could go out of business. They change their name. They put up a different website 6 months, 6 weeks from now, so you can't even trace them down. We can use the information, however. The Federal Trade Commission, the BBB, even the FBI uses this information. We pool it together like we did in these studies, so then we can find the commonalities. I can tell you that over 70% of people that fall for this scam are usually female because the products and the advertisements appeal to that. It's across ages. Ages are spread pretty evenly, although there's a slight bump in the 30 to 39 age group. It's all of North America as well, and spreading to other parts of the world. We found that this is in the English-speaking world, U.S., Canada, U.K., Australia. In Australia, this went up 400% in the past year. So these scammers, again, they work across the entire globe. And it's the widest kind of brush that they can use because they can get, they can pick people off everywhere. And again, in a few weeks, in a few months, they change to a different product and a new website, and you don't even know where they went.
And finally, Jim, with about a minute left, if people are either a victim of what they feel is a scam or if something looks like a scam, how do they report it?
Well, you can report it on our BBB Scam Tracker, which is a kind of a heat map, if you will, of what's going on. You can look at your own zip code. You can look somewhere across the country where you have friends or relatives and find out what scams are happening right there. You report that information. We share it with other BBBs, with the public, and with law enforcement. So, again, when we can share that information, we empower our community. We empower each other to try and stop these criminals from taking money from folks that would rather spend it on themselves.
Jim, it was a pleasure having you on for a few minutes. Thank you so much, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too, and your listeners. Thank you.
Jim Timmer is the president and CEO of the Wisconsin Better Business Bureau. He joined us today to talk about why risk-free trials online are sometimes clever scams and how people can protect their wallets on the Internet.
In just a few short days, people the world over will be ringing in 2019. For many, that means popping some champagne, spending time with friends, and celebrating the end of one year and the beginning of the next.
And what better way to greet the new year than to have some tasty food on hand to share with friends or family? And our next guest has some fun and delicious recipes that will be crowd pleasers wherever you bring them.
For Food Friday today, we wanted to revisit a conversation we had with Lazarus Lynch. He's known as the son of a Southern chef, and he's an entertainment chef from Queens, New York. He focuses on Southern cooking. Lazarus, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Judith. It's an honor. Thank you.
So what was New Year's like growing up for you?
Well, you know, I grew up in a huge food family, so food was always a central part of New Year's and bringing in the New Year. But church was also a really important thing that we did as kids. We went to church, you know, almost 5 days out of the week, and so New Year's was no different. We would spend, you know, from 9 o'clock at night to about 12 midnight, we would spend our time in church. Then we would go home, and we would tear up some really good food.
You
and
earned it after
we were all
that, right?
Exactly, exactly.
And so what kind of food was it that you went home for after that long church service?
Well, it's interesting. My church was predominantly African-American based, so there was a lot of Caribbean members and members from the South. So there were actually people who would have food at the end of the service and, you know, cakes and collations. And when we would go home, my household looked the same way. My father from the South, from Alabama. So we would have my dad's salmon croquettes. You know, at that point, it's in the morning. So we would basically eat breakfast foods. And then my mother from Guyana would have curry chicken and roti. And she would have sarl, which is a popular drink from Guyana. And that's how we would eat. But we would always start first. My brother can witness to this. We would always start off first with dessert. Because the idea is if you start off the year sweet, everything will be sweet.
Wow. I can get behind that. That's a pretty good theory. So how do you approach New Year's now? Has it changed much? Or are there elements that you've kept all these years?
Well, a lot has changed. I mean, for one, we still go to church. We still spend time in church together as a family, and then we come home. I think last year I ordered some Chinese food. I'm really not sure how that happened. But it changes every year. Our family has grown. We're not kids anymore. you know, we have new members of the family. So we try to find out who has the biggest house, and we try to go there. So it's usually our house, my mom's house, and we all stay there, and, you know, we open up some gifts sometimes. And this year, I think we're going to have all of our items ready to go, all of our food ready to go, all of our sides. And we start out the year with some quiche. We start out with prayer, and yeah, that's what we do.
We're definitely going to dig into some of the recipes that you shared with us. But I also want to go back to something you said, Lazarus, that your family has grown. And I'm guessing with that growth, there have been new and different traditions that have also been incorporated. Are there some elements that wouldn't have been around maybe 20, 30 years ago, but because of new members of the family, you do things differently or you've added to it?
Great question, Judith. Well, for one, we have tons of Wi-Fi passwords all around the house, which 20 years ago was not a thing. Because everyone comes and they want to, you know, the first thing they want to do is pull out their phone and take pictures and upload to Instagram. So what I like to do is, and this is in general entertaining anyone, I have Wi-Fi password all up on the wall in different parts of the wall. I tell people where the bathroom is. It's sort of an introductory thing. But there's way more use of technology these days. And so, you know, as kids, we would play a lot of games. We still have games, but we like to section off parts of the house designated for children, designated for my younger cousins to play. We have another area that is for technology use, like television. We have another place which is for like the DJ and have a playlist going. So we sort of designate the house into different areas. The kitchen is always the most highly trafficked area for obvious reasons. But those things have been incorporated over the years.
So what kinds of food do you think are best for these big celebrations when it sounds like you've probably got a spread of ages and interests and different palates that are all of a sudden all together for this occasion?
Absolutely. My philosophy is go simple. Don't try to do all of the roasts unless it's you're up to it, you know, but really try to spread the weight out. So what we do is, you know, we'll cook a turkey, we'll probably cook some stuffing and some macaroni and cheese. But people like to nibble. When they first come in, sometimes they don't want, you know, a huge plate of food. So what I like to do is have a couple of things that they can nibble on. So whether that's some seasoned cucumbers or that's some spiced nuts or that's some breadsticks, you know, with prosciutto that they can wrap their breadsticks in. I like to have sort of mini bites available and, you know, a crudité platter, a platter full of vegetables and fresh fruits are something that kids can enjoy. It's something that parents can eat. It's something that all people can eat, even if you have vegetarian or vegan friends at your party. But I would say it's also important to think about who's attending your New Year's Day party, what are the allergies, what are the food restrictions, and try to plan your menu accordingly.
Well, and you talked about, you know, letting people kind of graze as they're getting there and socializing a little. And one of the recipes you shared with us, which people can find at WPR.org/Food Friday, is cucumbers with hummus and feta. And
yes.
That sounds really good to me. Why do you like to do that one?
It's, you know, it's so easy. Cucumbers are available all year round. I love cucumbers. I would eat them, you know, just as they are. But they're really delicious. And I find that you can turn cucumbers into an appetizer very easily. You can cut them into thick slices. You can even season them. I like to season my cucumbers with some salt, a pinch of sugar, and maybe even some smoked paprika. Mm. It almost takes on a barbecue flavor. If you're being very ambitious, you can add a little bit of garlic powder to it, just a little bit. And, you know, you can top so many things with them. You can top some cream cheese with a little bit of dill stirred inside and maybe, you know, a piece of smoked salmon on top, or you can do something really simple and just have your cucumber seasoned, garnish it with some hummus and some feta cheese that you can just sprinkle. And the last thing I love to do with cucumbers is just make a buttermilk dressing, you know, just some feta, buttermilk in a blender, a little bit of salt, and have that as a dipping sauce for my cucumbers. It's delicious.
Do you peel the cucumbers, Lazarus?
I don't peel them. But you know what? If you're using an organic cucumber, I don't peel it. But if you're not using an organic cucumber, you can peel it. Some people like to peel it because the flavor is a little bit different, the texture is a little bit different. So it's optional.
We're talking with Lazarus Lynch, known as the son of a Southern chef. He's an entertainment chef from Queens, New York, and he focuses on Southern cooking. And we're talking about New Year's traditions and great food to serve for a gathering. And kind of sticking with that easy to pick up and munch on maybe before the main course is holiday spiced nuts. And what kind of nuts, first of all, do you like to use, Lazarus?
I use a combination. My favorite are almonds or pecans, but you can do a combination of nuts. They all work the same.
So none of them get soggy or anything like that. It's really up to your taste.
It's really up to your taste, and that's one of the reasons I love this recipe. I usually have a can of all different kinds of nuts. You could do this with cashews. It would be delicious. And one of the things that I like to do is, after I've created the recipe and I've baked them off, you know, this is something that you can put in the night before, and they'll dry overnight. Mm. It's really easy. But then if you want to decorate your house, you can put these nuts into mason jars and then tie them up with some beautiful string or even some bows. It looks really festive, and it brings in the new year with a lot of nice beauty around your house.
So Lazarus, what kind of spices do you use? It seems like it's probably anything goes, but do you have some favorites?
Well, it's really anything goes, and it's usually whatever I have left from the
from
year that I
else.
Throw on my nuts. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's cinnamon, it's sugar, some nutmeg, allspice, ginger, cayenne pepper. You know, this is really like, think about the flavor of eggnog. Think about the flavor of, like, here in New York, there's spice nuts carts all around. So it has that sort of anise, cinnamon sort of flavor. But if you wanted to go sort of in a savory direction, you can also do like garlic powder, onion powder, some paprika. Mm. You can keep the sugar, but sort of change the dynamics of what you'll experience when you eat the nuts. So it's really delicious. You could also throw in some dried herbs, like some dried oregano would be delicious, or some dried parsley.
Mm-hmm. I was also thinking maybe curry powder could be good.
Oh, curry would be great. Some turmeric and cloves, that would be delicious.
We're listening back to a conversation with Lazarus Lynch right now. He's known as the son of a Southern chef. He's an entertainment chef from Queens, New York, who focuses on Southern cooking. And he's with us to talk about New Year's recipes and ways to be a great host.
And you can share your favorite New Year's Eve recipes, foods, and traditions online on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org.
There's more coming up on this week's Food Friday. Stay with us here on Central Time. It's a special New Year's Eve edition of Food Friday. We're revisiting our conversation with Lazarus Lynch, also known as the son of a Southern chef. He's from Queens, New York, and he focuses on Southern cooking.
And you can share your favorite New Year's Eve traditions on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
Here's the rest of our conversation with Lazarus Lynch. Lazarus, I want to turn to this turned up collard greens recipe. It sounds amazing. First of all, what is it about collard greens that you enjoy cooking with?
Oh, it's so versatile. The greens are tender. They can be eaten raw, which a lot of people don't know. Traditionally, people cook them. They just have such an amazing depth of flavor to them. And they're also really high in nutrients. And so they're very healthy for you. I love to cook them the way I grew up eating them, you know, covered in beautiful stock and aromatics, and oftentimes having a salt pork or a piece of turkey bone inside of there. But I love to also just cook them in some salted boiling water and eat them just like that. I mean, it's just delicious.
So you just blanch them a little bit, and then you can either eat them right away or combine it with these other things. Yeah, in the recipe that you shared with us, and again, you can find that at WPR.org/Food Friday, you have adobo seasoning, some cayenne pepper, and those roasted turkey neck bones. And I have to say, one of the things that strikes me about Southern cooking is it seems like just about everything gets used and nothing goes to waste.
That's right. That's right. And that's exactly why we, you know, use the turkey neck bones. We roast them. I'm also using, you know, a Scotch bonnet pepper. If you can't find a Scotch bonnet pepper.
That's a hot one, isn't it?
No, that's a hot one. You can use a habanero pepper, even a jalapeno pepper, seeds removed, because that's where most of the heat lies. But the reason I call these my turnip greens is because we're turning up the heat inside of the greens.
I love that.
So, yeah, it's a play on the act of turning up the heat in the collard greens, which I love.
Well, let's go to the phones. Lynn in Eau Claire is up. Hi, Lynn.
Hi there. I was recently in California, in Carmel by the Sea, and had a wonderful, very, very simple appetizer that can be made for any celebration. It was some seedless watermelon, kind of nice cubes, made into like a pyramid shape, so you can imagine a Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. Simple dressing of olive oil, coarse kosher salt, feta cheese, and some roasted pine nuts.
Ooh.
And for the holidays, you could put, maybe hit it with some fresh chopped parsley and cranberries, or some hot peppers, you know, some chopped scotch bonnets and some cilantro. But it was amazing.
You know, Lynn, I have to say, not too long ago, maybe in the last year or so, I saw a watermelon salad on a menu that had feta in it. And I like both of those, but I was really skeptical. And boy, I was won over immediately. That's a wonderful flavor combination.
It's great.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, Lazarus is, I mean, Southern cooking, I'm assuming watermelon figures in somehow.
Oh, for sure. I love that idea, Lynn, and that's a great experience. I love to cube them up, just take them, you know, right out of the shell, and I like to drizzle a little bit of olive oil on top, some honey, some fresh mint, and some cilantro, and that's just a delicious, and a little bit of salt. Some people in the South love putting hot sauce on their watermelon. Don't ask why, but they love that. It's a really fun way to just elevate a really simple fruit. You can also do that with melon.
That sounds really good. Thanks so much for that call, Lynn. And Lazarus, you also have a recipe, speaking of hot sauce, for sriracha honey wings. And you also add sesame seeds and scallion as a final touch. So there's a lot going on there. There's kind of an Asian thing to something that I think of as a pretty American dish, hot wings.
Right. Yeah. Well, we grew up eating a lot of hot wings, and we also ate a lot of Chinese food on the weekend. So I fell in love with this kind of cuisine working at a Japanese restaurant when I was in college. But the technique of frying is something that's very interesting. Instead of using a self-rising flour or just an all-purpose flour, I do a combination of cornstarch and flour, which really adds a beautiful crisp texture to the fried wings. Actually, I think it's just cornstarch and egg whites that I use.
Wow.
And it's just really the ultimate crisp factor that you want in wing. It's delicious. And it holds up for hours.
You know, that's what I was going to ask, because a lot of these foods, like we were saying, you know, you kind of want them out so people can, you know, eat a little, talk a little, eat a little more. And so those hold up well over maybe a few hours?
They hold up well. And you can just put them right in the oven. If you're taking them to travel, fry them in advance. You can coat them in advance, put them into an aluminum pan, and then just reheat them in the oven. They are delicious.
Let's go back to the phones, and Jerry in Oakdale, Minnesota is up. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. See, I'm wondering if you can give us a good recipe for some nice tangy buttermilk dressing. But before you do, can you tell me the difference between bone broth and chicken broth?
Ah, two good questions. So bone broth and chicken broth, what's the difference, Lazarus?
Well, a chicken broth is a bone broth, but a bone broth traditionally has roasted poultry bones that are roasted in the oven, and then, you know, water is added to it along with some aromatics. A chicken stock is traditionally just chicken bones, so a bone stock may have other kinds of bones inside of it other than chicken.
All right, there's answer number one. Answer number two, what about a good buttermilk dressing?
Yeah, I like to go, you know, maybe a cup of buttermilk, and I believe I have this on my website as well, but a cup of buttermilk. I also like to add in some sour cream, maybe about a quarter cup of sour cream.
So even a little more tang that way.
A little more tang. I like to do a little bit of, like, a teaspoon or two teaspoons of Dijon mustard, and just whisk together. It is so easy. And then a little bit of coarse black pepper. I love doing that.
Wow, that sounds great. And that would go well with the cucumbers we talked about earlier, too. Thanks
Absolutely.
For that call, Jerry. And Lazarus, earlier in the segment, you mentioned your dad's salmon croquettes. What is it about that recipe in particular of your dad's that you want to keep alive?
These are so special to me. These are sort of like your poor man's food. You know, they are, it's salmon out of the can. It's not the salmon that's the highest in the fish market. And it's so, it's just so easy to make. My father would make them the size of his hands, I always say. They were the size of, you know, an average human face. And he would cook them in a cast iron skillet with a little bit of vegetable oil. And we would eat that with some tartar sauce or often on bread. And it's just the way to welcome the new year. It's definitely a recipe that was passed down from my grandmother to my father and from my father to me. And that's one of the reasons it's so special.
I love recipes like that. And actually, I love things like salmon patties, salmon croquettes. You mentioned a tartar sauce. Is there anything unusual about that tartar sauce? What do you season it with?
Well, I use Dijon mustard. I've fallen in love with Dijon in culinary school, and I've been using it ever since. My father, he used to use yellow mustard, which is also acceptable here, but that Dijon with a little bit of white wine inside of it, it just really takes us to the next level. And I also use some pickle relish, which is, you know, it's pickled cucumbers, basically, mm-hmm. with a little bit of sweet and pickle flavor. So it really helps to add the notch of flavor. I've also added some dill inside of the tartar sauce occasionally to go along with the fish. That's not in the recipe, but it's a really good way to increase, you know, the flavor.
And again, you can find that recipe and all of the recipes we're talking about today at WPR.org/Food Friday. And Lazarus, how experienced a cook do you need to be to make your recipes? Because I'm sure there's some people are saying, oh, that sounds so good, but I'm just not sure I have it in me. I mean, it sounds like there are, for really good food, you don't always have to be, you know, a cordon bleu trained chef to make them.
Oh, absolutely. You know, even though I've went to culinary school, my parents are not, you know, culinary trained professionals. They're just everyday people who love food. And so that's how I grew up cooking. And I think if you know how to read a recipe, you can do it, you know, and there are tons of videos I have up online that you can watch. But something like a cucumber, I mean, you slice it up and you sprinkle some salt and sugar. I think the idea around the holidays is to be stress-free, you know, no fuss, and really try to help use the folks that are with you to help you make these recipes.
Which can also be fun, and especially if you're incorporating younger family members, it's a great way to get them started in the kitchen, too.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, Lazarus, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Are you someone that makes New Year's resolutions?
You know, I don't. I have never been a New Year's resolution person. I look at the New Year as sort of a blank check, you know, and it's like, okay, here we are. We can create a new beginning. We can create a new destiny, if you will. But I just sort of like to approach it, you know, with an open mind and really try to journal, actually, all the things I've learned and all the things I'm grateful for and try to pay it forward in the next year.
That sounds great. So how many people are you going to be having over on, I guess it's Monday, and what are you going to be cooking?
Oh, boy. We'll have probably about 20 to 25 people rotating in and out throughout the evening and into the morning. Well, you know, we'll cook everything. We'll have a ham, of course. We'll do my pineapple glazed ham, the macaroni and cheese. We'll do some cornbread. Of course, we'll have the collard greens. I also do a collard green barbecue salad with peppers and red onion, and it's delicious. And I cheat. I use a little bit of barbecue sauce from the store, and I make it into a dressing. It's delicious.
Wait. How do you make a dressing out of a barbecue sauce?
Oh, it's so easy. You just, you know, it's barbecue sauce. It's a little bit of apple cider vinegar, and I think that's all I do, and maybe a little bit of olive oil, and I just mix it up together, and there's your dressing.
Wow. Do you tell people that it started from a bottle?
Well, I do. It's actually one of the recipes.
You just said it on air, so I guess it's not a big secret.
Of course I do. I mean, I have no shame in that. But that's the thing. You know, use what you have available to you. Don't stress out. Something from the store is not going to hurt you. But it's really about the family, and it's about being with people that you love and celebrating good food. That's really what the holidays is about, in my opinion.
Lazarus, thanks so much for joining us. Lazarus Lynch is known as the son of a Southern chef, and he's an entertainment chef from Queens, New York. He focuses on Southern cooking, and he joined us to talk about some of his favorite recipes for New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
You can find his recipes for holiday spice nuts, salmon croquettes, turnt up collard greens, sriracha honey wings, and more at WPR.org/food Food Friday.
And we want to hear what you're going to do for New Year's. Are you having people over? Are you going somewhere else? What are you going to serve? We want to hear all about your favorite meals and maybe traditions for New Year's. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR. If you love to wear attention-grabbing socks, maybe bold stripes or polka dots, this story is for you.
Researchers have found a connection between people who opt for eye-catching socks with being a creative rebel, someone who thinks and dresses outside the box and is likely to have a playful side.
They say it's similar to having a funky haircut or dramatic eyeglass frames. And Darrell, it turns out that you may be one of those creative rebels.
Well, creative in terms of socks. A friend of mine, James Causey, who is a columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, started this thing on Facebook where he would wear these really colorful socks. And so he was challenging other people to wear like colorful, outrageous socks. So I got involved, a number of columnists and newspaper folks and folks around the community, both in Milwaukee and the Madison community, got involved. So we would show off our socks, take pictures of them, and then we'd post them on Facebook.
That's awesome. Well, I have to say, with recent pledge drives that we've had here and the WPR socks being a thank you gift, I think there are a lot of crazy sock people out there. This morning I was actually going to wear my WPR socks, and then I went with basic black.
I got to get my hands on a couple of pairs of those.
We'll work on that.
Yes.
This is Central Time.